This is Rating Descending,
where we watch IMDb's Worst 250 so you don't have to.
My name is Abigail Ward.
I'm Michelle St. Clair.
And tonight we're watching I Know Who Killed Me. A young woman who was missing reappears, but she claims to be someone else entirely. Let's watch. So something happened over the weekend.
An incident?
An incident occurred. We were, Michelle and myself and, you know, Gayden and Brooke were all due to meet up and, mm-hmm. and talk about some creative ideas that we've got going on at the moment. And I could not come. I warned everyone in advance the night before because Claude went out to a gig without me. He went out to see a metal show. I should have come with him, but I was like, I don't want to. I want to stay in. I'm tired and stressed.
Yeah.
Had a great night, watched dumb reality TV, and then I get a call from Claude at like 10:30, and instantly I was alarmed because it was too early. Like, yeah. I thought he'd be home at around midnight or 1, and when he called me, I was like, he can't be coming home now. That's bizarre. And I was like, hello? And he was like, Abby, you're not going to believe what happened. And I was like, what? And I almost thought like, oh my God, I had this like pang of fear. I was like, did something horrible happen? Or did he cheat on me? What's going on? And then he was like, this guy punched me in the mouth and I lost a tooth. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, he punched my tooth out. And I was like, oh my God. And he was like, it hurts so bad. He was like, I'm just in the taxi, in the Uber. I think he was a bit drunk as well, which did not help. Claude loves metal gigs, has gone to metal gigs for most of his adult life. He's never really been hurt too badly. Mm. Occasionally he'll have like a boot print on his back in bruises, maybe, like, but that's it.
How'd the boot get on his back?
Oh, dude, I don't know. He just took off his shirt one night and I was like, you have the imprint of a boot on you, but it's all a bruise.
Did someone step on him or did they kick him they just so hard? What?
Yeah, while they were moshing. They were
who
in the
kicked
pit.
Kicked him? Fucking Goku?
Yeah, well, apparently this guy who punched him in the face, it was a complete accident. He was just going too hard. He hit Claude and Claude felt it really hurt, but it felt instantly numb. Yeah. And the guy didn't really notice and they kept dancing. And then after a while, he was like, oh, I feel like my mouth keeps hurting. And then he just put his tongue up against his teeth and it was missing.
Oh my God.
And he freaked out and he was like, I have to go home. And apparently the guy went up to him later being like, dude, are you okay? And he was like, yeah. And the guy showed him his arm and it was covered in Claude's blood.
Oh my God.
Because he'd split his lip.
Yeah.
Because now Claude has, if you see him now, I mean, he's not going into work this week for a reason. He's got a bruised bottom lip and he's got a cut top lip. And so the top lip looks really puffy and swollen. And it looks like he's had injectables, like really bad injectables.
He got filler.
He kind of has like, there's this meme of Kris Jenner where she's like, her front lip is swollen. Mm. And he kind of looks like that meme.
Oh my God.
And of course, apparently, so the tooth didn't fall out. It snapped at the top and his nerve was exposed. And so instead of meeting up with my lovely friends, I took him to the dentist and he got a big cement filler tooth installed. They like sculpt it.
Oh, cool. Did they sculpt it the same? Is it still snaggle?
It's a bit snaggle.
Okay.
It could be snaggler. They did just narrow his tooth and so it looks less pronounced and I'm not as into it as I was before. Because the tooth he lost was my favorite tooth that he had.
Yeah. It's a prominent Claude too.
It's a prominent Claude feature where I thought it was so cute. Like on our first date when he would like smile, I would see his little snaggle tooth come out and I just thought it was such an attractive feature.
Yeah, you saw him and you were like, heavens to Murgatroyd.
Oh my God. I hope no one punches that out in approximately 3 years. And here we are.
Here we are. Well, so do you think you're going to stay married?
I don't know. Like I'm not feeling as confident in the relationship anymore.
Yeah, now that he's not a snaggle.
The spark's gone. Yeah. My Mr. Snagoo.
Yeah. Gone he was forever. Like Snaggle Puss and you loved it when he snaggled your puss.
He did. Yeah, the head's going to be way less good now. No, I don't want to say that.
It's too late. It's too late. That stays in the edit.
No. But also part of it was that so I had to send an email. So when Claude called me.
Yes, this fucking email.
When Claude called me, afterwards I was sitting there thinking, okay, like I looked up like, what do you do when you've like lost a tooth? At that point, I didn't know it had snapped. I thought it was completely lost.
Yeah.
And so I was looking it up and then I called Claude and I was like, apparently if you get the tooth back, they can put it into the impression of where it was before and it's basically, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But you've got to do it as quickly as you can. And so I was like, should we call the venue and see if they can find their tooth. And he was like, I doubt you'll get through, but sure. Tried to call them, couldn't, left a voicemail. And so then I emailed them, and I'll read you out the email that I sent to this venue.
You should get him some sensitive toothpaste, you know, get him some Oral-B so he can still do that Oral-B.
Yeah. So I sent this email off on Saturday night at 11:09 p.m. Hello. My husband got a tooth punched out at tonight's gig. He foolishly didn't bother to find it and went home. Turns out you can put teeth back in, but it must be done quickly. Any chance a tooth was found tonight? If so, please let us know. Abigail. And then he got another email from me at 11:24 p.m. And I said, hello again. Turns out it just snapped off, so way less urgent. Please do let us know if you find half a tooth. And then I got a response today.
Oh my God! I don't know this bit. I knew the first email. All of our friends already have been obsessed with, but it must be done quickly.
Look, the email I got in response was very profesh and short and sweet. He said, hi, Abigail. Sorry I was away on holiday for the long weekend. I have instructed the cleaners to keep an eye out. Hopefully, we will find it. Cheers, Stev. So, they're on the lookout.
That's good.
At the venue. Look, he doesn't need it anymore. But apparently, the tooth is going to... There's like a 95% chance that the top of the tooth will die.
Fall out?
It's just going to die.
Right.
And so, he's going to need a root canal. And then the other front tooth... So, his snaggle tooth is in the front to the right. But his other... Like, his one of his front left teeth got hit so hard that it's a bit loose.
Oh.
And he's talked to the dentist about it. And they were like, that tooth could die as well.
Oh, my God.
So, it's not great.
That's terrible.
It was like a $5,000 punch if he ends up getting two root canals.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's not really a cost we need while we're buying a house.
Dental should be on Medicare, man.
I know. Dental should be free. We all deserve teeth.
It's not just that we all deserve teeth. We all have teeth.
Exactly. We all at some point know we'll have to maintain those teeth.
We deserve to keep them.
Yeah.
Right from the day you're born.
It's a right.
Baby teeth for life. Baby teeth for life.
Well, that was Claude's tooth debacle. What was your tooth debacle, Michelle?
Oh my God. I mean, we're deep enough in that we can go straight into it, but I guess for my teeth, I don't know. I feel like the bottoms of some of my teeth, I worry they're weakening. I know.
Have you gone to the dentist recently? Me neither.
Don't do this on air.
No, me neither. Don't worry. Michelle, I'm going to tell you right now, all right? And this might put you at ease. I haven't been to the dentist at least since we moved down to Melbourne. And that was 4 years ago.
I went one time since we moved to Melbourne.
You beat me.
I know. And they were like, wow, I think you need 3 fillings. And I was like, ooh. Oh. And I was like, how much would that cost? And they're like, this much. And so I never went again.
Did you get the fillings, though?
No, I did not have the money and I still did not.
Okay. So you didn't like get them done and think, I will never return. It was just, I'm walking out.
No, it was like, please book a follow-up appointment that'll cost this much. And I went, uh-oh.
How much was it for it's 3 like fillings?
$450.
Yeah, that's fucked. Yeah, guess how much Claude's cement filling tooth cost?
How much?
$650.
Oh, my God.
And they were like, it's probably going to fall out anyway.
$650 for a tooth. Yeah. What is this world coming to?
It's disgusting. He shouldn't, that tooth should be free.
That tooth, free the tooth. Free the tooth.
They actually did a pretty good job, like, modeling it. Technically, Claude's had cosmetic surgery when you think about it. What a shallow, vapid whore.
Shallow, vapid whore.
Yeah.
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 Put that on his fucking tombstone.
I fucking will, Michelle.
I'm going to write it in lipstick on his window.
Also, I know we're probably running too long here, but the Oscars. What did you think? Just quick impressions.
I had a conversation with honored friend of the podcast and former guest and also friend and collaborator of mine, Mel Killingsworth, about a week prior where she asked my Oscars prediction. And I'm not going to lie, I was bang on the fucking money.
Ooh.
Across the board, right down to it should be Lily Gladstone, but I reckon they'll end up going with Emma Stone.
Oh my God.
Right across the board.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was exactly what I expected, but Oppenheimer deserved to sweep. Son of Interest deserved Best International. Anatomy of a Fall deserved at least one, and the one it got, it deserved.
I'm happy it got Best Original Screenplay. That's exciting.
I'm particularly happy The Boy and the Heron got animated film. I loved Across the Spider-Verse, but I do think it was notable that Boy and the Heron deserved it.
Notably as well, I will say with Anatomy of a Fall, didn't it get snubbed for Best Foreign Picture? because
it
got snubbed because basically like the director was like talking about,
she criticized Macron, and so then the government was like, fuck you, we're not putting this in, and then she-
they like snubbed her on purpose because of like a political agenda, which is really upsetting. It's really disheartening.
Then she was like, the movie's good enough anyway. It's good shit.
It is good enough anyway. It was fucking excellent.
Well, I mean, they're all good, they're always good enough anyway.
I know everyone said that it should be Lily Gladstone. Look, I haven't seen Flowers of the Killing Moon, so I'm not sure. Killers of the Flower Moon. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen it yet. Because it was 3 hours. I'm like, I would have to go piss at some point and miss a bit of it.
You can't go 3 hours without pissing?
No, I have a weak bladder.
Damn.
Yeah, I piss a lot. And you know what did it to me?
Yeah.
COVID.
Oh.
Because I was working at home, I could always get up and piss at my whim, and it was easy. And because of that, I kind of trained myself to piss more frequently.
You know what you could do?
What?
There's this button on your remote. It's called pause.
Oh.
Yeah. When
I can't do that in the cinema.
It's on Apple TV.
Apple TV.
Oh, well, that's...
I didn't see it in cinemas when it was doing its run. So I haven't seen her performance. I did kind of want it to be... the woman from Anatomy of a Fall, though.
Oh, Sandra Hüller?
Yeah, I really wanted it to be her.
I think it would have been fun, especially any other year, because she was in two of the fucking Best Picture nominees. That's insane.
100%. I feel like it was an unfortunate year for her, because maybe if it was last year, she would have won. I don't know. Yeah. Actually, no, she wouldn't have against Michelle Yeoh. She was a pretty dead set like winner.
Either way, I'm happy she was recognized, you know?
Yeah, me too. I'm glad she was there.
I'm glad everyone was recognized. That's my favorite bit. I'm like, the winner doesn't matter. It's just like all these movies are really good.
Does Jimmy Kimmel piss you off?
I fucking hate Jimmy
Kimmel.
He's
so annoying.
I think I've said this on the podcast before. When I was young, I used to wake up at 6 a.m. so that I could watch Dragon Ball and then comedy specials. Mm. And then later, also Digimon. Mm. Also notable with Dragon Ball, Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball, died just recently, the other day. Yeah. And so I've been rewatching Dragon Ball.
Nice.
Love that man. however, sometimes it wouldn't be Dragon Ball. And sometimes it would be The Man Show, starring Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla. And it's just as bad and sexist as it sounds. And I feel like we all forgave Jimmy Kimmel for The Man Show. And it's not like he got any funnier.
Why does he have a good reputation right now? I don't understand. He shouldn't be invited to do the Oscars.
He's also not funny.
He's not funny enough. Why do they keep bringing him back? I think they bring him back because he's safe. Because he gets enough laughs. But not... the right ones, in a sense. Oh, but there was this, like,
he fucking hates movies too. Half of his jokes are about how these movies are really annoying and piss him off.
And he hates the ones about women. He hates them.
Hates the movies about women.
He loves making jokes at their expense.
Hates when movies are long. He's like, oh yeah, I get a load of this movie. I'm like, you're at the fucking Oscars, man.
He made this joke at the expense of Poor Things, and there's this clip of Emma Stone. Everyone's laughing, and Emma Stone turns to her partner, and she's like, "What a prick."
Yeah, because he is.
He is. I love Emma Stone, though. She's great. And her little dress debacle as she got her Oscar.
Her
dress unzipped, like it was broken at the back.
I
also wondered, because everyone's talking about her look of shock when she was announced, because everyone wondered if she thought it was going to be Lily Gladstone and didn't think it would be herself.
Yeah,
because she clearly didn't expect it. But I have to wonder if it was also her thinking, fuck, my dress is broken. Like, totally. I really don't want to get up now.
I think there'd be so many things like, my dress is broken. I thought it was going to be Lily. Oh, well, people are going to criticize me about this. Yeah. Like, there'd be a lot going through her. As well as, like, I didn't think there was any chance I'd win a second Oscar. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think she was thinking, like, people will resent me. It wasn't my year. But she does deserve it. She's an incredible actress.
Yeah. That's the thing. Every time someone's like, this person didn't, they always deserve it.
Yeah.
Except Green Book.
Yeah, oh, that was a shocking year.
Green Book didn't deserve it.
Fucking Green Book. I didn't even see it and I knew it was boring. I was bored just looking at the poster. Yeah. I was like, ugh.
It's really not. Clips of it keep coming up on TikTok and I'm like, stop reminding me of this movie. And it's really not very good.
I want to forget it.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of really not very good, let's just launch into it tonight, shall we? Oh, man. All right. Hey, Michelle.
Hey. I'm leaning in.
Hey.
Oh, my God. My mic
is falling down. Let's get into this nitty gritty. What did you think of I Know Who Killed Me?
I, by the end of it, kind of dug it. Based on how bored and apathetic you look, you seem not keen at all.
No. I'm not bored and apathetic because it's fucking bananas.
It is bananas.
It was weird as.
I think the first 10 minutes, boring.
So
slop,
boring.
Bad. Genuinely bad. The next 10 minutes, verging on torture porn. I really
difficult to watch.
I was watching it when it was almost 40 degrees and I was like, And I was so tired from a long week of work. Mm. I was like, the last thing I want to be doing is watching this fucking movie.
The first half was a real slog for me. Yeah. But the second half really picked up, in my opinion.
I think the movie, it almost feels like it must have been shot scene by scene because it gets better and better.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a real... I went into it with very, very low expectations. And I'm not about to say that they were necessarily exceeded.
Mm.
But I had a better time than I thought.
Yeah.
It was camper than I thought, yeah, in a sense. The performance were worse than I thought they were going to be. There were just more bits of it that made me laugh at how outlandishly silly it was.
Yeah.
But apparently it's like a cult movie.
That makes sense to me. It feels like a giallo. It reminded me, yeah, of Urban Legends.
Yeah.
Though not as good as Urban Legends. Nothing, yeah, can touch my precious baby Urban Legends final cut.
We just do not see eye to eye on that film at all.
You know what? Officially, I'm going to say right now, MR, change my score for Urban Legends. No longer 7 or 7.5. It's now 8. 8.1.
Jesus. Well, I like the confidence though.
Yeah.
You know? Stand by your decisions, Michelle.
I'm doubling down. It's 8.1 now. It.
That's a confident woman right there.
Yeah, I have... I'm hulking out,
she's
baby.
Bulging out of her shirt.
Urban Legends 8.1. I know who killed me had good moments.
It did have good moments. But I feel like it became a cult film, especially because it had a leading lady that was very much in the spotlight at the time because, yeah, she was spiraling out of control, just like Britney. And I feel like... Because it was just, I think it was like the first edgy film Lohan had been in. And all these people were like, holy shit.
No, it's just the first edgy film.
Edgy film ever.
It's the first one they made.
Yeah.
At this point, in 2007, they were like, what if we just went a little edgy with it?
So what was your general, you kind of dug it by the end.
I kind of, like I said, this first 10 minutes I didn't like. The next 10 minutes I was like, I really don't want to fucking watch this. I was like waiting for a scene that went too far so that I could text you because you hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Don't watch this.
Yeah.
And then that sequence ends.
That sequence was so bad I had to turn it down because I was, yeah, like, the screaming is distressing.
There were bits where I just had to turn away from the screen. It was really
pretty gory. It was actually really gory as a, yeah, film.
It was like, in hindsight, I think also it felt gorier in the moment because it felt like it wasn't letting me know how far it was going to go.
Mm.
So I was like, in hindsight, it was stomachable. It just... felt like it was going to go so much further, and it didn't. And I appreciate that.
I think it did hold back at the appropriate times. There was never. I felt like it was gory, but not to a point where I was like actually uncomfortable.
Genuinely, again, I felt mostly uncomfortable because it felt like it was going to go harder, which is actually really good direction.
Mm.
And then it just takes the interesting turn. Like, I didn't know what the plot was going to be.
No, I didn't either.
So it took such an interesting turn. And then also kept doing different stylistic things, like the dips to blue and the dips to red, where I was like, kind of clicking in. And then, by the midpoint, I was like, am I enjoying this? And then by the third act, I was like, I think I like this.
Well, the blue and the red, the very on the nose, you know. One of the characters is blue and one of the characters is red.
But it's not just like blue and red. It's so blue. It's so blue. So red.
And then there's a bunch of things that are purple to convey like the combination of these characters. I mean, look, I'm going to jump into it because I feel like we need to address what it's about.
Yes, we do.
Before we can really talk about it, because it's a kind of a strange, confusing film. My overview is simplified, but I had to make it simplified.
Yeah.
So, just a couple of key details. This was directed by Chris Civitston.
Okay.
He didn't really do anything of note afterwards.
Aww.
Believe it or not, this did not launch his career.
See, that's the thing. I think my takeaway is if I was a producer and I saw this, I would give this kid money and be like, let's sharpen.
Let's refine,
yeah. But I think you got juice.
Yeah, Hollywood doesn't have time for that shit. No, you're either brilliant immediately or you're out.
That's why I don't remember the name of the Urban Legends guy, the editor who did it, Orville, or I can't remember. All I'm remembering now is the anti-version of him, Gregory Plotkin.
Oh, Gregory Plotkin.
But good guy version of that. He didn't direct another film either. And I was like, that movie had juice.
Yeah.
He got the stuff.
He got the stuff, man. This was written by Jeff Hammond and it starred Lindsay Lohan. Julia Ormond played Aubrey's mom. Neil McDonough.
Yeah.
Was he in... is this like his second time coming back?
Paul Blart Mall Cop too, baby.
How could I forget? Neil McDonough. It was only 3 years ago or something like that. And Brian Geraghty, who plays like Aubrey's boyfriend.
Right.
So here's the overview.
He was the weakest in the whole fucking thing, by the way.
He was terrible. He was actually terrible. And he is so generic looking as well. I was like, you look like every blonde American man I've ever seen.
Every time it cuts to him, I'm like, yes, an American man.
I think he's been in a bunch of war films like Jarhead. And I think that's been his role. Oh, he's sure. Probably just been like the sniper in the back, you know, like he's sure. Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the overview. Aubrey Fleming, a young pianist and aspiring writer, finds herself bound and gagged on an operating table as she is tortured. Late one night later, a young woman who looks identical is found wounded on the side of the road. Her hand and leg have been amputated. By the way, the fact that she wakes up and her hand and leg are gone, I was like, that's fucking crazy. I was like, that's a big... That's scary. Like, when she's looking and she's, like, missing limbs, yeah. I was like, this is fucked up.
It's fucking metal.
Yeah. Aubrey's parents are stunned when the young woman claims she is, in fact, Dakota Moss, a stripper. Convinced Aubrey just has PTSD, they take her home anyway. Can you imagine just being like, it's all right, honey. No worries. You're just fucked up in the head. We'll totally. Take you home.
But I get why they think that.
I get it. Totally. Do get it. They take her home anyway, where she continues to insist that she is not who they think she is. Also, by the way, when she's at home, like, Aubrey's boyfriend comes over and they instantly fuck.
Yeah.
Like, they fuck. And she's missing a leg and missing an arm and she's just going at it.
Yeah, it's, you know? Great.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
It's great. I like that he didn't have any qualms with that because that's such like a cheap shot that's in a lot of movies that do this of like having to navigate disability and not doing it very well.
She was pretty fucking capable in bed.
Hell yeah.
Did not stop them. And there's a bit afterwards where she's like, did Aubrey ever fuck you like that? Did she ever fuck you? Do you think she would now? Because yeah, anyway. Dakota later confronts Aubrey's dad, who eventually admits that he informally adopted Aubrey from a crack addict who bore twin daughters, one of whom was Dakota, who was left to be raised by her biological mother. Aubrey's mother, Susan, has remained unaware of this for all of Aubrey's life. Dakota figures out Aubrey's piano teacher was behind everything, and she finds and kills him. She digs up the spot where Aubrey was buried, only to find her still just alive. She lies down next to her twin. The end. Which I thought was so funny. I was like, if you found someone just alive, even if you were like, wow, this justifies everything I thought, wouldn't you be like, let's get you to the hospital? Like, ASAP.
No, but also, okay, so the third act of this, my housemate walked in and sat down to watch it. And I was like, I'm kind of digging where it's going. And when it was doing that bit, I literally out loud was like, come on. Because what I want, I was like, as soon as it breaks open and we see her, I'm like, if there's another scene, this movie... is a coward.
Yeah.
If it ends here, that's a good choice. It fucking does. And I'm like, good.
I like that it ended there, but I wish it was almost like she calls an ambulance quickly and she's like, we're here. And then as they're waiting, she lies down next to her.
Yeah, but we know that they call an ambulance.
But I don't, because she's just lying, chilling. Wouldn't you be like, hey, could you like call me an ambulance? Because I've been buried alive.
I'm sorry the movie isn't a one-to-one to real life. Sorry that the art took liberties,
but it's satisfying at the end because there's this look on Dakota's face when she's looking down at the real Aubrey in her grave. There's this great look of satisfaction as she's smiling down at her where she's like, I was right.
Yeah.
I wasn't Aubrey that had lost my mind. I'm a different woman. And there's a lot in this film about how they share psychic like memories and abilities. Yeah.
Which I thought, I really dug that. Yeah. I thought it was fucking, like, there's the instructional video towards the third act where they talk about twin stigmata.
So camp.
Yeah. I think the guy doing it really needed to perform it slightly differently than he did.
Just a bit less.
Just, yeah, or at least different, you know, maybe that much, but in a different way. But I was also like, this is such a rad concept to throw in your movie that I'm so into it, which is, what is it, that a twin who gets hurt, sometimes the other twin can get hurt in the exact same way, in the exact same area of the body, and that's why she's missing a hand and leg.
Yeah.
And that's how she helps figure out. She knows that she's buried because she's losing her breath.
Yeah.
That's fucking cool, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, apparently, I didn't include this in the trivia, but the director, he said that he was really interested in this idea of twins and twin stigmata because he had heard this story as a younger kid about there were these two twins and one twin got into like a car accident and ended up dying. Uh-huh. And the other twin claimed he could feel the moment it happened. Mm. Like, he could feel his twin was in danger and he felt the moment his twin died. And so apparently that story just stuck with that guy forever. And he wanted to make something based on it. And I mean, twins are fascinating. I think twins are really interesting. Not because they're like spooky and mythical. They're just people.
Weird twins.
But there is like these cases of, what is it called? Like It's called like, it's, there's a French term for it. It's like joie de folie or something.
Oh, sure.
And it's about where two people, and specifically it happens to twins, have shared psychosis.
Mm.
I think that's so interesting, where they like both enter the same psychotic state.
Yeah, you've already told the true crime story about the psycho twins.
I'm not going to.
Just to cut you off on the podcast.
I won't. It's too long to get into.
There's so many.
But everyone look up the Erickson twins, because they are fucked up.
Or just listen to the podcast and everyone will tell you the whole thing.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not going to tell the story of it, but there was one night where I was I was listening to the episode about it in bed. I think it was probably a case file on it or a criminal on it. And I was like listening to it in bed and it was so creepy and it actually kept me up. And then Claude woke up and he was like, "Are you still awake?" And it was like 3 a.m. And I was like, "Yeah, I've been listening to this episode about," and then I explained the whole thing to him and he got so freaked out by it that we were both like looking it up in the middle of the night and then just telling ghost stories until 5 a.m. It was actually really sweet.
Now, that's really cute.
Yeah, it was.
This movie's funny. There's a bit towards the beginning where I realized what it was operating. Like, it was in that first 10 that I think didn't work. But I think it helps set expectations for later. The pep rally, I think that's what it was. Or the football game where they were like announcing and stuff, and the regular Aubrey is there.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about how there's the missing girl, Jennifer Tolan. And they're like, "Let's have a minute of silence." And the whole crowd is silent.
Yeah.
And then the announcer goes, "Now let's get out there and win this one for Jennifer Tolan."
Yeah.
That's funny. That's missing and dead girl.
It was.
Or not real, but in the movie it is.
I love how, like, as we said, there's also the blue and the red symbolism, but there's also like they took it too far. I mean, there's literally a bit where Aubrey's boyfriend gives her a blue rose.
It's not the beginning. It's so good.
But then she's like, "How did you find a blue rose?" It's just so silly.
That's great. But that also kind of ties in towards the end as well. Like, oh man, I really dug that it was doing that, because more
fucking loved it.
More movies should do things like that. That's why I loved it.
Mm.
Watching all these movies, they're always playing it safe and going like, "What if I was like every other movie? Boo. Fuck you. Do something interesting. Oh, the roses are blue." Like, that's great.
Is it?
Do that. Yeah. That's cool.
I love how much you love it. I don't think I do love it as much as you loved it, I thought it was a fun time.
I've seen so many movies, and to me, the bigger crime than being a bad movie is to not do anything adventurous. Like, you're making a movie.
Yeah.
Do you know how hard that is? Do you know how like much work it takes compared to, like, you can paint a picture or whatever and it might go in a motel.
Mm.
And then that's seen as like middling art of like who gives a fuck, right? Yeah. Why would you set out to make the movie equivalent of that? At least a painting, it's like, you can knock that out in a few days if it's like a motel art piece.
I guess
you can't knock out a movie in a few days.
You'd do it for the same reason people do it for the motel art, is that you'll probably make money off of it.
Yeah,
you can make boring cinema because you'll probably make money off of
it. Yeah, that's why I don't respect it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't, yeah.
This is someone
But you respect this film, though?
This is someone making their art. It doesn't matter if it's not very good. Making their art.
Chris Stevenson really did throw himself into this.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he really loved the idea of this. And I think the reason it did become a cult film is that you can tell that he was trying really hard with it. It wasn't like a cash-in.
When she's like having the twin stigmata visions and it's like the blue petals falling onto where she's gotten buried and stuff. That's good. That's interesting.
I did not think you'd love it this much. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not going to give it like a 7 or 8. Like I said, it's no Urban Legends final cut.
No, clearly.
But, you know, it's a runner up.
Well, what did you think of Lindsay Lohan's performance?
I think for the first hour I was like, yeah, this is why she was in the Kenyans. And then for the back hour I was like, she's too good for the Kenyans. Like, by the end of it, I got that she was clicked into the movie.
Mm.
I think the problem is that Lindsay sometimes struggles when playing characters like Aubrey more so than Dakota. Because she could do standoffish in a way that made me believe that she was Dakota more than just being someone in psychosis.
She did. I think she was really fun to watch her try and be like edgy and cynical and mean as Dakota. I liked watching her as Dakota.
Yeah.
But you're right. When she was playing Aubrey at the beginning, I was like, what is this? This is bizarre.
It's kind of nothing.
Yeah.
I think Lindsay's built for good camp performances because if you give her scenery to chew on, she really chews it.
But the thing about her is that she's got really good comedic timing. I mean, she was the leading fucking mean girls for a reason. Yeah. She could take that script and really work with it as the straight girl in it, as Katie.
Yeah.
But it's funny because she plays this character similar to Aubrey as Katie at the beginning of Mean Girls, but she does it really well there. But she doesn't really do it very well here. But she does try and lean into Dakota more. I think because she's like, I'm an adult. I want people to treat me like an adult. I'm not doing teen fucking comedies anymore. I want to do edgy cinema. And so she really tried to go, like, deep and dark into it.
Yeah. And, I mean, to be fair, Aubrey also doesn't really have anything going on as far as, like, personality.
Hey, she's got a boring boyfriend.
Yeah. I kind of think actresses that I like more than Lindsay would also struggle with that role. Because it's kind of nothing. It's one of the weak points of the movie.
Truly. There's so many good actors and actresses that struggle with a weak script, you know? Yeah. Like, it's pretty difficult to act your heart out with a shit script.
Totally. What did you think of the cops?
The cops were... I thought the story with the FBI was a bit bizarre. Like, yeah. I thought it was, like, tacked on.
There were times where it felt like some of the more... Like, I think Act 2A, it felt like some of the more interesting parts of the movie. Mm. And I was wondering where that was going to go. And then they kind of become less relevant, especially because they think they've solved it by going, she's a DNA match.
Yeah.
And then they're kind of not really relevant at all to the back half. And it makes me wonder, like, why did we do that?
I think they just needed the FBI to explain... to be like exposition while they're setting up the mystery of like, who is this girl? But it can't be not Aubrey because her DNA matches it. Like, I think they were just there to really like be the surrogate for this, the audience being like, this is what's going on.
I mean, this is 2007, so the director wouldn't have seen it when making this, but it made me think of Zodiac as a negative comparison, because like Zodiac was really good at like having these police crime solving scenes that ultimately don't go anywhere. That's the whole thing with the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah.
And that could have been the case here, but that's also such a fine line. Yeah. And I think in this, it wasn't quite found, but I also don't think all the scenes were useless. Like, I wouldn't have suggested to cut them out of the edit. Maybe just cut them differently.
Dude, when I think about it, police procedurals are like a top genre for me, because this producer I'm working with, he asked me what I've been watching recently. And I was like, well, right now I've been watching The Shield, which is about cops in LA, obviously. It's about like corruption in the LAPD. And The Shield is fantastic, by the way. Everyone should watch it. It's fucking great. The season 5 finale blows your mind. It's intense.
Wow, you're deep in.
Oh, we're deep in. Oh, we're like in season 6. We're near the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to binge.
I didn't realize you're so deep.
Oh, man. But then there's also bits of it that are bad because they just like drop storylines, and then there's continuity errors. Because
it's like proper TV.
Yeah, it is. It's like early 2000s, Sean Ryan's just going for it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care if he's making mistakes, but it's good TV.
Yeah.
There's a bit in It's Always Sunny where they're doing impressions. And then I think Dee is like to Dennis, okay, do CHH Pounder. Remember CHH Pounder from...
CCH Pounder.
From RoboCop 3.
Yes.
She's Claudette in The Shield. Oh, she plays in the lead. Shield. Yeah, she plays a lead character. Yeah, and she's like, do CCH Pounder. And she's like, Dennis is like, God damn it, Dutch. What other errands do you have us running for the DA?
Isn't it notably Dennis that does it? And they're like, because they're joking, like, it would be potentially offensive or whatever. But then he nails it so hard and that they're Frank all like, that was great.
Frank's like, that was amazing. And Dee's like, you haven't even watched it, Frank. And then everyone's like, you haven't watched it? It's great. It's like a great show. And he's like, no, but I get the vibe. It's like, you know, like a no-nonsense broad from the precinct. But it's a good show. And the other thing I've been watching is, like, Happy Valley, an English cop procedural. I tend to gravitate to them because I fucking love them.
It sucks because, like, cop shows, complicated because a lot of them can veer into copaganda. Things like NCIS are just straight up trying to sell, like, the cops should have military equipment.
Mm.
But then at the same time, procedural, incredible format for TV.
Mm.
So good for TV.
And it's funny, when you watch The Shield, it makes you... Claude and I were joking when we're watching The Shield because they're not like... They do explore corruption in the force and basically the white cops working against black people. There's a lot of those themes of the way that civilians are treated. But then the people that Vic Mackey, the lead character, is always tracking are like just mostly people like drug cartels and gangs. And when you watch it, you're like, fuck yeah, Vic, get him. That guy like killed a little girl. Go fucking get him. It's like, it gives you this weird, they will criticize the LAPD, but then they won't glorify them, but they will show you why they are good at what they do and why they have to do the things that they do. So it's this very complex insight into a corrupted system.
That's also what makes shows like that virgin copaganda, because they successfully do that in TV more than they do in real life, you know, which is part of the difficulty. Yeah. But that's also like the Breaking Bad effect. Like, when you're watching Breaking Bad, you're still like, Walt, get Gus.
Fucking
get him. Exactly. And then you're like, well, this guy sucks too.
Exactly. Vic Mackey is a great protagonist because he is corrupt. He is the face of corruption in the LAPD, but he's the guy you're there for. Like, he's your protagonist. and you want him to win, even though he's working against his team. It's really good. You would fucking love it, Michelle. I need to get it for you. It's not on anything. I would have to get you the box set. I will say, last thing about The Shield. It's so fucking good. Last thing about The Shield. Every time you think that they're going to lead somewhere in a storyline for a whole season, it doesn't take you the way you think it's going to take you. Mm. It ends up wrapping up. It's sort of like, oh, you thought that was going to be for a whole season? Nah, that's done in two episodes. And now we've got another thing.
Hell yeah.
And you're like, whoa. Like, you really think that they're gearing up for something big, but they're it's pacey.
It's because we're used to the fucking modern, like, limited series. Like, what if what used to be a few episodes is now a whole season?
Mm.
God, just TV used to fucking move.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly. We don't need this really long, grueling slog to the end. Like, we get where the arc is going. Make it snappier. And then take it in a direction we do not expect it to go.
It's like TV thought they were taking... Like, a season of Buffy will often focus on one big villain. And Netflix often, in their shows, think that they're taking that and then making it six episodes. But what they're doing is they're taking what used to be a sub-arc of a season of Buffy and making that six episodes. And that's just why the pacing gets murdered.
Oh, that sucks.
In an alleyway. By the piano teacher.
On the dance floor.
On the... Ooh.
In the matter on the dance floor. Better not kill the will.
DJ.
Hey, hey. Matter on the
dance floor. Stomp.
Better not kill me.
DJ.
Hey, hey, hey. One last thing about The Shield.
Oh my God. We have to talk about this movie. We have a movie that has juice going on and you're talking about The Shield?
Oh, fine.
We can't keep talking about The fucking Shield.
Please. One more thing about The Shield.
It has to be. It's got to be a quick one.
The theme song's ridiculous. And it's really loud and it goes, that's the theme. And so sometimes there's a really dark bit and the show gets darker, like Breaking Bad, you know, as it goes on. And there's like, you're watching season at the beginning, you're like, this is fun, and like the theme works great. And by season six, it's like, we're gonna have to find him and kill him. And then when Sean Ryan later was asked that, someone was like, did you ever regret using that as the theme song? He said, no, I like it unreservedly. Okay, now we can move on.
Okay, that was worth it. That was totally worth it. Okay. Oh, well, I had at least two other things I wanted to talk about.
Please.
One was, there's that fucking bit. This is what I mean by the movie is really, it's really cooking, right? I call it Gordon Ramsay because it's cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Because she starts seeing this, she's having a dream, and it's like the boyfriend has a monologue where he's got like a tattoo on his chest of a heart and stuff. The monologue sucks. I actually don't care for the monologue. Yeah. Easily the weakest part of this movie is the script, to be honest. And when I say the script, I mean like just like the dialogue itself is kind of atrocious.
It's awful.
But the tattoo is like moving in this stop motion sort of animated way. And then he gets a rip on his chest, and through the rip, we see this blue light and like an eye looking through. And that was fucking cool.
That was sick.
That was sick as hell.
The blue eye was sick.
The blue eye was great. And so like, if you tune out to what people are saying, this movie's great.
Okay. All right.
This guy needed a different writer, you know?
Hey, look. Look, what was your reaction to the moment where she's at the grave, she sees the ribbon on the grave, she figures out that it was the piano teacher all along that killed Aubrey and blah, blah, blah. Oh, tried to kill Aubrey. When she goes, oh my God, I know who killed me. Were you like, whoa?
I was like, it is almost impossible to pull off like a title drop, and they did it. Especially because it came so late. I hate when like title drops come in and they're like towards the beginning or whatever, and you're like, ugh, get a fucking, you know, come on, man.
Do you reckon jerk in that off case motion. That maybe the title came later? Maybe they were like, that's a good line.
I think
that's
so.
That's catchy.
I think often when that's the, like, you don't think of the title and then put it in the movie. I think it is often you have a line and then you go like, that's it.
Because it
felt so earned because she really did solve it.
Yeah.
And she did it and she had to come up with it because she was the one who figured out that she's a twin.
She's an assertive lead protagonist. She's great.
The bit where the mom is proving to her, no, this is my baby. And then we see Neil McDonough in the background.
Yeah.
And we're like, what did the dad do?
Yeah.
And then she confronts him and is like, I know what happened. That baby didn't fucking survive. The mom just told me she fell down the stairs and couldn't feel kicking anymore. There's no way that fucking baby survived. You took the baby off my mom. I know that's what happened. I was like, holy shit, you did it.
I really liked her teaming up with Neil McDonough's character. I feel like that team up was fun.
That was great. It was too short-lived. The fact that Neil McDonough dies, it was just... Like, I get that it needs to up the stakes so that she has to overcome it, but at the same time, Such a shame.
Such a shame.
It was a good team up for the third act.
And he wanted his wife to be happy.
I know. Like,
he wasn't a bad guy.
And he was giving money to them. Yeah. Like, I mean, look, let's not just say that what he did was moral, but but he, good intentioned.
Good intentioned.
Well intentioned.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear some reviews?
I'd love to. What about trivia?
Trivia. So, you know how with the Canyons, there was most of the trivia there was about Lindsay Lohan?
It's one of the saddest episodes we've done.
This is another one that's got a lot about Lindsay Lohan.
I wish I didn't talk up the movie so much.
Well, Lindsay Lohan... No, it's not like... this isn't one where... In the Canyons, I feel like Lindsay Lohan was made to do things that she felt uncomfortable about, that she did not enjoy, that she had a really tough time on set.
Yeah.
This seems like an experience where she was having legal and drug issues outside in the real world, but... In on the set of this film, she wasn't having a bad time.
Okay.
The director really respected her.
Oh, cool.
He didn't, chastise her for, all the shit that was going on in her life, and he worked around a lot of it most of the time. In fact, they stayed really good friends afterwards.
That's really
and
cool.
He always said that he would love to work with her again, despite how difficult everything sounded on set.
Yeah.
But she herself was going through... basically one of her worst, lowest of low drug moments. I think she was... at that time, she would have been dating Samantha...
From Sex and the City?
Robson? What's her name?
I don't remember.
Oh, dude, she did the song at the end of Mean Girls, where it's like...
Oh, that song?
Do you ever feel like you wanna be... That's by Samantha Ronson. And Samantha Ronson and Lindsay Lohan went on to date around 2007.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Lindsay Lohan's a queer idol.
I knew that she was bi.
Yeah.
I didn't know that she had publicly dated a woman in 2007.
Yeah.
We were brutal back then. Holy shit.
Yeah. Literally when I, was a young queer woman myself, I was I loved Lindsay Lohan for it. Especially because Lindsay Lohan is so femme and it's just unexpected, I suppose. Yeah. She was just this... But everyone relates her time with Samantha Ronson to a lot of her drug use. But I mean, hey, you're allowed to be queer and take drugs. Yeah. It comes with the territory.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Actually, they're related. No, that's not.
whoa. Yeah, in 2007, media outlets began commenting on Ronson and actress Lindsay Lohan, who were seen being affectionate in public. So that was around that time. Okay, so with the movie, Lindsay Lohan's legal issues became a problem during filming. Some days she showed up late, some days she didn't show up at all. While filming the climax and reshoots, Sivitson used a body double and digitally replaced her face with Lohan's for she wasn't on set.
They nailed it. I didn't notice that at all.
Yeah, me neither. Filming stopped after less than a week when Lindsay Lohan's appendix was removed. The incision got infected and Lohan entered rehab for the first time.
Oh.
Filming finally resumed in February 2007. This is a very difficult time for her.
Yeah.
Because of her negative reputation, Lindsay Lohan could not even walk to her trailer without the paparazzi photographing her.
Jesus.
Sometimes they would even end up in the background of some of the shots of this film. Step it away.
I didn't notice that.
Lindsay Lohan, this is annoying. Not about the film, just about men in general. Lindsay Lohan actually took pole dancing lessons to prepare for her role as a stripper. Because of the strict no nudity clause in her contract, she was not willing to strip nude for the film, and they didn't make her.
That's good.
I know, for once. This was a source of criticism for viewers and critics because Lohan is playing an exotic dancer, the nudity was naturally expected. Made more apparent by the fact that the background strippers in the film do get naked except for Lohan. Dudes were really annoyed being like, but she's a stripper. Why didn't she get her tits out?
What are we doing?
I don't know.
What are we doing here?
And to be honest, there were a lot of reviews that said that. I went through a lot of reviews on IMDb of this.
What?
And all these dudes are just like, how come she didn't get naked?
Is that why this is on this list?
I don't know.
What are we doing here?
I don't know,
What the fuck is going on? Guys, and when I say guys, obviously, not all men. What's going on in your fucking heads, man? What is this? No one listening to this podcast is this kind of person. But if you know anyone in your life who's like ask someone, what's your opinion on I Know Who Killed Me? And if they say anything like this, just give them a little smack.
Yeah.
I think, controversial take, some people deserve just a little smack.
Just kick them in the balls.
Nothing that'll do lasting damage. Just something to really shock the system and then ask them, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
The film's critical and financial failure seriously damaged the careers of director Chris Sivitson, actress Lindsay Lohan, Producer Frank Mancuso Jr. and screenwriter Jeff Hammond, who never wrote another film script again.
That's so not deserved for this.
Look, the dialogue was the worst bit, I will say.
I know, but like, think of the things we've seen on this list and how many of those are made by people who went on to make many more movies. That's craziness.
I will say there's so many little details with this film that, like, there was a lot. So this is my favorite piece of trivia, and I included it because of how bizarre it was. It's very long. Blue objects are dominant throughout the runtime of the picture, as the color represents Aubrey's personality. In the first 35 minutes alone, we see Aubrey's dark blue shirt, along with her blue dress, blue gloves, a blue pill, blue uniform, blue football fans wearing blue sports shirts and blue body paint, Douglas Norquist's blue ring, a blue mouth gag, a blue laptop bag, a blue cat collar, Aubrey's blue Lexus car, Douglas's blue car, blue tools of torture, a blue solution poured on a hand, blue everything in an operating room, a blue hospital gown, a blue iPod, a blue candy jar, blue roses, a blue pen with blue ink, a blue backpack, a blue photo album, a blue foggy glasses with red graffiti at a bus stop, blue bus seats, a blue uniform for the gardener, blue font on the missing posters, a blue lamp, a blue candle, a blue folder, blue walls in a classroom, a blue morgue, blue hospital walls, and even some characters have blue eyes. I reckon they started the list, got 35 minutes in, and went, that's enough. Great stuff. Thank you, whoever did this.
It's such a rich blur.
Such a rich blur.
It makes me think of movies like Deep Red, Suspiria.
Yeah.
You know, cinematic references. Mm-hmm. More things that make me sound like I know films. My cinematic history.
Yes.
The Bicycle Thief. That's a joke. It's a famously black and white movie.
In a 2019 interview, Sivertsen revealed the existence of a 3.5-hour long director's cut. And if it could get released, disclosing to a lot of people, it doesn't make sense. And there were a lot of plot scenes, especially a lot of investigative FBI stuff, that were just totally cut out of the movie. I was more interested at the time with just the weirdness of it all. I want to see that 3-hour cut.
So bad. But I love the
double the time.
Of being like, actually, this movie that some people have said is like the worst of all time, there's a 3.5-hour director's cut. And then immediately you start thinking of Kingdom of Heaven, of all these different director's cuts of like, oh, is it good? And he's like, no, it's way worse.
Yeah. A lot of people said it didn't make sense.
Actually, it's terrible.
Moon Bloodgood, who was in... she was a detective from Street Fighter,
that was it,
The Legend of Chun-Li. She was turned down for the lead role.
Really?
But I just was like, Moon Bloodgood, with the best name I've ever heard, back again. This is one of the details that I like about this film. Like, there were so many little details, I think, that they did put in just as jokes. The neon sign above the strip club entrance malfunctions with the arm and the leg fading in and out.
Oh!
A foreshadowing technique for the fact that Aubrey and Dakota have their arms and legs amputated.
I knew there was flickering, and I knew this was the kind of movie where it would mean something, and I couldn't clock that's what it was. That is the thing.
Good. I do respect that this film has these little details, because the director cared enough to put it in. I kept this piece of trivia in because I just thought it was the worst trivia I've ever read. And 6 people rated it helpful, and 8 people rated it unhelpful. Oddly, while most store-exclusive bonus discs with special features are included in an envelope in the case, the bonus disc with cast and crew interviews for this film was instead included in its own separate case from the film. 8 rated it unhelpful. Get off IMDb! Here's another piece for you. There was so much trivia.
There's so much trivia.
Here's another one for you. The original ending, where it's revealed that the entire film, like, so there was an original ending that they had to test out. In that, it is revealed that the entire film was simply a script written by the unnamed student played by Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, boo. That would have sucked.
That was what Jeff Hammond has always intended to be the ending. TriStar Pictures and 360 Pictures were adamant that this ending would not be well received by audiences.
No, it wouldn't.
Prompting Chris Syverson to shoot 2 versions of the ending and to use the one that test audiences preferred. Go figure which one they ended up on.
Yeah. That's because that's crazy.
It's nuts. It's terrible.
It's terrible.
It's all a story.
Because also, Did he reshoot and include the bit where the FBI find the story? Because that would have been nuts if the reveal is that the story, but they find the story that they're in.
Yeah.
That's almost interesting, but in a negative way.
And here's the last piece of trivia. Not screened for critics.
Yes! Yes, yes, yes!
Always my favorite.
Always the favorite.
Do you want to hear some reviews?
Yes, please.
Reviews! Rotten Tomatoes reports a 9% approval rating. The website's consensus reads, distasteful and ludicrously plotted, I Know Who Killed Me is a career nadir for all involved, especially Lindsay Lohan in a dual role.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Rechtschaffen of The Hollywood Reporter said, there's a fresh candidate in the running for worst movie of 2007 honors. I Know Who Killed Me, a ridiculous thriller minus the thrills, starring the embattled Lindsay Lohan in a dual role, has all the hallmarks necessary for qualification. A nonsensical plot that grows sillier by the second, tawdry special effects, heavy-handed symbolism that's big on electric blue hues, and mechanical performances are all culprits as far as the title's concerned.
Brutal.
I know. Here is a review left by Partial Movie Viewer in 2008. It's a 1 out of 10 review, and it says no spoiler here.
So it's not even a full movie viewer?
Just partial.
Just part of one.
Yeah. Or maybe they're partial to being a movie viewer.
Oh.
Impartial movie viewer.
Partial to movie viewing.
This is a must-see film. Twists and turns and twisty ties and curves and bumps in the road and all sorts of bloody body parts. Good stuff. Talk about plot. Plot, plot. This movie doesn't need... This movie don't need no stinking plot. The flick was obviously penned and directed by those wanting to emulate such attack classics as Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think this movie will definitely attract a cult following. Who knows? Maybe even become bigger than Rocky Horror Picture Show. Whoa. There are a few things this movie is missing, but a remake would take care of those problems.
What?
Imagine watching something and be like, nah, it's fine. The remake will take care of it.
that's crazy. What are you, a studio executive in 2024?
In my head, I am picturing something with a little more pep. Maybe a musical. That it a musical. In all actuality, if the movie was produced as a musical, this would be brilliant.
What?
First one must gather the entire crew and cast together. Double their pay. Write some rock. No, wait. Country tunes. And spend an entire week putting everything together. Once the editing is complete... Voila! We now have an extravaganza of song and dance frolicking across the screen. Easily, this movie would become the original cinema graphic holiday. 1 out of 10.
I think by the end of it, I became convinced that it was Chris Sivertson himself pitching a sequel. Everyone should double their pay if we bring them back.
And here's another 1 out of 10 review left by Name is Mike 69. And the title of it is Lohan, what did you do? That's the title of it.
Oh my god.
Also, again, I will say there were so many reviews that were left by people being like, take your top off.
Oh, come on.
You take your top off.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Touchstone Films 2007. What did I just watch? My redheaded princess. This film absolutely made no...
Ew.
How did this movie get made? 2019. I mean, the industry is even more shut. But wow, this was the beginning of the end. A corporate movie she made worse after this, like, homemade thing, whatever it was. Was this her last movie? Apparently in the so-called mainstream industry, but ended on the... Lohan, wow, this was bad. Nothing connected. It was like two non-movies in one.
But come on.
Why was this made? How did it get out? Was the script... I can't write full sentences. I watched this in 2019 because I needed a Lohan movie to watch. Now I have to find another Lohan to make up for this one. Do not watch this non-movie. This is a zero. My pretty red Lohan... I'm so sorry you made this. In 2019, it's probably worse to get a good role. 2007 marked the end for cinema, in my opinion. I'm not alone with the one rating. But since then, few movies have been made better. So much crap has been made. I pass every movie that has a post 2006 date on it. I don't know. The end. Now I gotta see if Herbie the Volkswagen was better. Probably not. 1 out of 10.
That was written and delivered as if it was someone who just woke up from a coma that they went into in 2007.
I just love, now we've got to see if Herbie the Volkswagen is any better. What do you think?
They're referring to Herbie Fully Loaded, right?
Yeah. It wasn't My Name is Mike. It wasn't.
Oh my God.
Well, that was that psychopath's review. What's your review?
Like I said, I started clicking in. I think Lindsay worked. I think more so than Moon Blood Good, a woman named after a list of vampire interests. Mm-hmm. I think it like I said, the direction got increasingly sharper in a way that almost makes me convinced they shot it in order. I do think there are still problems, all right? This is not Urban Legends. This is not A Wrinkle in Time. I'm not fangirling about it, all right? This is no Cat in the Hat.
Thank you.
All right? That being said, I think this is unfairly maligned. I will be taking influence from this in my own career. I hope to make something and someday someone asks me what I'm inspired by and I will say, I know who killed me.
Oh, Michelle.
Because
what's going on?
Movies should be bolder and more interesting.
Oh.
Hey, listeners at home, if any of you are in the industry, be bolder with your art. And if you're outside of the industry, but you make art of any kind, be bolder with your art. And if you don't make art of any kind, but you live your life, be bolder with your life.
Mm.
You know?
That's good advice.
Yeah. We get one shot. Since I turned 29, I can't stop thinking about the fact that I will die one day. We get one life.
What?
Be bold, you know? Do what you can. You may as well be who you are and show what you are to the world. It's good.
And in the words of a great musical, I'm not throwing away my shit because I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shit. You know? Makes you think.
It does make you fit. This is my review.
Sorry.
Abigail?
Yeah, what's your rating, bitch? Hurry up.
I think it's... I'm going to give it a 6.5.
Whoa.
I'm going to give it a 6.5.
Whoa, I did not think it was going to be...
I'm going to give it a 6.5.
Hey, you love it and you love it unashamedly, okay? You go for it.
No, yeah, I'm not backing
down. But I'm allowed to laugh at you for it.
You're allowed to laugh. I'm going to live bold. Rating this a 6.5 isn't quite as scary as transitioning was.
But it's up there.
I know I'm making a bold claim.
What was more difficult, coming out to your mom or just giving this a 6.5 right now?
I think giving this a 6.5 right now.
Because I am far more violent than your mom.
My mom, yeah, you are genuinely far more violent than my mom. I knew my mom would be pretty supportive. Oh, that was pretty hard.
But she took it really well.
She did. She took it really well. What the fuck?
I mean, she heard it really well. I don't know. My apologies.
I got you. I fucking got you.
You know, because of the burden that it is. You know?
Yeah. Because of how hard it is on her.
Yeah, it's difficult for her. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, that's... Okay, that's 6.5 is pretty high.
What about you?
Listen, I would watch it more than A Good Year.
Okay.
There's no chance I'd want to rewatch A Good Year. I would probably rewatch this film pretty... There's a reason it's a cult film. It's fun to watch. And you know what? I left this out, but there, not only is it like a cult film, it is often screened in cinemas as a cult film.
Really?
Because that's the level it's getting to. It's not really so much in Australia, but in America, across America, in various cities, it's become a cult bad film that gets shown... Like The Room, they do screenings of it. So...
And this is what I mean. Some of the problems I had with the beginning, like the violence, retroactively I was more into because of the actual restraint shown.
Yeah, honestly. And I actually have quite a lot of respect for the director, especially how he handled Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
He didn't force her to do anything she wasn't comfortable with. And he had like tastefulness around the gore and the violence as well.
For sure.
So listen, it is above a 5 for me. Mm-hmm. I'll give it a 5.8 because Lindsay didn't have to get her tits out.
Yes!
This time Lindsay won.
We stay winning.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Guys, we're on social media.
It's been almost 4 years.
Hey, did you like that episode? Because we're on social media.
Yeah.
We're on, what are we on? We're on X at Rate Descend Pod. We're on TikTok at Rating Descending. Or you can email us at ratingdescending@gmail.com. please do. We love the emails.
Or you could find us on our own social media. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at michelle.stclair. You can find me on Letterboxd at mstclair. Also, go watch Shippers, one of the same producers as No Ordinary Love, and another series as well that she was showrunner of years ago that I cut, Sydney Sleuthers. Go check out Shippers on YouTube at Shippers the Series. And I think it is just like you still have a small window of time if you want to get the hackable portable music player inspired by the iPod classic Tangara at crowdsupply.com/cool-tech-zone/Tangara.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
And we're also on YouTube. Rating descending.
Yeah. Or, you know, on top of all of that, there is one thing you could do that really would make a difference and really help. So leave a review wherever you get your podcast, because as I said, it really makes a difference.
Well, Michelle, that was another Lindsay Lohan classic. What are we watching next week?
Next week, we are watching Delta Farce.
Cool.
As far as I know, I'm pretty sure it's Leslie Nielsen parody.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's it a parody of?
Space.
Just all of it.
Just space.
We're going to satirize space. So stupid.
What? Space? I hardly know her. Work with me for the outro. Work with me for the outro.
How can I work with that?